centuries ago, not long after the Bible began. Jacob lived in the land of Canaan, a fine example of a family man. Jacob, Jacob and sons, depended on farming to earn their keep. Jacob, Jacob and sons, spent all of their days in the fields with sheep. Jacob was the founder of a whole new nation, thanks to the number of children he had. He was also known as Israel, but most of the time, his sons and his wives used to call him Dad! Jacob! Jacob and sons! Men of the soil and the sheep and crook. Jacob! Jacob and sons! A remarkable family in anyone's book. Reuben was the eldest of the children of Israel. Was Simeon and Levi.
The story of Joseph, partly because Alex and Miriam both appeared in an excellent primary school production of Joseph and the amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, definitely in top 10 proud parent moments, but also because it holds nothing back. There's money, there's sex, there's power, conspiracy, deceit and intrigue, plenty to hold our interest. It's just simply a great story, but there's much more to it than that. Now the account starts with Jacob, the son of Isaac, the son of Abraham, whom God had called out of Ur in the land of the Chaldeans to go to a land that God would show to him. In Genesis chapter 12, God promises Abraham to make him into a great nation, even though at that time Abraham had no children or descendants of his own. And God promises that all peoples on earth will be blessed through Abraham's nation. In chapter 15, God showed Abraham the land of the Canaanites and made a solemn covenant with Abraham that he would take possession of that land. And it's in Canaan where we find Jacob living at the start of the story, in expectation of the fulfillment of God's promise to his grandfather Abraham. Now, I once met an Irish girl who was, at 19, the oldest of 13 children. She had 12 younger brothers, just imagine that, one sister and 12 young boys. Now Jacob has a similarly substantial family. Chapter 29 tells us about Jacob's 11 sons born to four different women. One more is to be born in chapter 35, and together the 12 sons of Jacob become the heads of the 12 tribes of Israel. So in chapter 37 verse 2, the writer of Genesis tells us that this is an account of Jacob's family line. It's the family that forms the nation of Israel, that leads to Christ, the fulfillment of Israel, and the church, the new Israel, formed as more and more people, both Jew and Gentile, are united in Christ. So really, it's an account of our own family line. As Christians, we are the new family formed out of the old family. Christ is our head, our oldest brother, if you like. Therefore, the lessons of family life learned by our forefathers are often lessons that we need to learn today in our own family. Now, the account doesn't start with brother number one, as you might expect. It starts with brother number 11, Joseph. Joseph is just a teenager. He is 17 years old when the story begins. And he's his father's favourite because he had been born in his father's old age, as we're told in verse 3. And also because he was the firstborn of his father's favourite wife, Rachel, who died in childbirth with Joseph's younger brother, Benjamin. Being his father's favourite, Jacob singles him out for special treatment. Now, Jacob is wealthy, and he can afford to give his favourite son a standout coat to wear. It's the amazing Technicolor dream coat of many colors, what our Bibles describe rather more sedately as an ornate robe. And Joseph was special in a way, because he was gifted. He has dreams. Not just any old dreams, but meaningful dreams. And he also has the gift of interpreting dreams. It truly is a gift from God. When Stephen speaks to the Sanhedrin in Acts chapter 7 and gives the speech that will lead to his stoning and death, he starts with Abraham and then this story about Joseph. It's a story that can get you killed. And Stephen tells us in Acts chapter 7 verse 9 that God was with Joseph and rescued him from all his troubles. He gave Joseph wisdom and enabled him to gain the goodwill of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Now these are significant gifts that God had given to him, the interpretation of dreams, wisdom, and the ability to win the goodwill of powerful people. Get that? Because it's important. Joseph was gifted. God was with him. But he was also a complete pain in the neck. And this means that not all was well in Jacob's family. Firstly, I'm not sure how to express this in modern terms. But Joseph was a snitch, a telltale, a grass, or as the older people might put it, a tittle-tattle. We see that right at the beginning in verse 2. He was out tending the family flocks with his brothers, but then he went back to their father and he brings a bad report about them. Secondly, being his father's favourite had done him no favours. In his father's eyes, he could do no wrong, whilst his brothers were always up to their necks in trouble. It had made him self-righteous. It really made him very hard to get along with. He was a spoiled, arrogant teenager, insensitive to his brother's feelings. No wonder they hated him. But he had a third major fault, because he was always looking for self-vindication. He wants to be able to say, I was right and you were wrong. We see this when he had his dreams in verses 5 to 9. In the first dream, in verse 7, they were all binding sheaves of corn out in the field when suddenly Joseph's sheaf stood upright and the sheaves of the brothers gathered around his and bowed down to it. Skeptically, his brothers ask him in verse 8, do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule over us? Now his second dream in verse 9 goes even further. Even the sun and the moon and 11 stars were bowing to me. In other words, the whole universe was bowing down to Joseph. It's like he's saying, I know you hate me because my father treats me so well and because of this coat that I love to wear, but you'll see one day the confidence Dad has put in me will be rewarded. You'll see, I'm going to do great things. Stand back and watch. A psychologist would say his dreams were just unconscious wish fulfillment. He desperately wanted his brothers to recognize his superiority. He wanted to prove that his father was right for picking him as his favourite. It's no wonder that his brother's hatred for Joseph is stressed three times in just five verses. Brotherly love was really stretched to a breaking point. In all, 17-year-old Joseph had committed three major mistakes in his interpersonal skills. He had told tales. Instead of saying, nice coat, Dad, but I can't wear this in front of my brothers, can I just keep it for special occasions? He flaunts his coat. He loves to wear his coat. He does it every day, flaunting his father's favoritism for all to see. And he abused God's gift by flaunting his own dreams in front of his brothers. It was too much information. They did not need to know what God had revealed to him in secret. Dreamers often get in trouble. There are people who speak into a world which isn't necessarily ready to accept the implications of their dream.
So even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted, and every hill and mountain shall be made low, the rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day. This will be the day when all of God's children be able to sing with new meaning.
Martin Luther King had a dream saturated with biblical language, motivated by his faith, a God-given gift. And little more than 7 months after he made that famous speech, he was dead, assassinated, out of hatred. Joseph's dream was also from God. One day his brothers will bow down to him. This truth had been revealed to him by God, but his need for self-vindication saw him tell all his brothers, "You see, I told you so," when the tactful thing to do would have been to keep it to himself. He even told his father, hoping his father would back him up as usual, but even Jacob gives him a rebuke for his presumption in verse 10. Now it seems clear that Joseph didn't yet have maturity or wisdom to use God's gift for God's glory rather than his own. He may have been gifted, but he wasn't yet wise. Now, the plaque under the statue of Edward Colston in Bristol City Centre read, "Erected by the citizens of Bristol as a memorial of one of the most virtuous and wise sons of their city in AD 1895. Really? He may have been wealthy, but he certainly wasn't virtuous, was he? He may have been good at creating wealth, but he was never wise because he had no respect for many, many human beings who had been made in the image of God. One day in my old church in Norwich, a young student walked through the door for the evening service, and afterwards he came marching up to me and wanted to introduce himself to the minister, as I was, telling me that he normally went to a large church elsewhere in the city, and then he told me proudly that his church had made him a prophet. He was officially recognised as a prophet. So I said something deeply, spiritually profound, like, "Oh, that's nice." He didn't come back. He may well have been gifted. I don't know, but he wasn't yet really very humble. He wasn't humble enough to use his gift for God's glory rather than his own. I've seen it closer to home too. Typically, the young man who's attended the right university, been one-to-oned by such and such famous preacher, and then picked to serve as an apprentice on a large church staff team. They may be very gifted at public speaking, but when it comes to, well, sometimes it comes with an innate sense of their right to rule, I mean, serve, which is really not healthy. They haven't had their gifting cut and refined by the rough and tumble of secular employment or challenging daily life, I guess. And Joseph was just such a person, an uncut diamond, not yet ready to be used effectively in God's service, protected for the moment by his father's unreasonable love. He was a damaged personality with serious interrelational issues. He was self-righteous and self-vindicating. Well, we're going to come back to his story after singing our next song when we return to part two of this talk.